Member Week is back at Lowe's with big savings for pros. Now through October 15th, my Lowe's Pro Rewards members get up to 40% off hundreds of items like paint, tools, building materials, and more. Plus, get free standard shipping. Shop these exclusive member-only savings before they're gone. Not a rewards member? Join for free today. Free standard shipping not available in Alaska and Hawaii. Exclusions and more terms apply. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Details at lowes.com/terms. Subject to change.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
This is a confusing case. Oh my God, there's new things coming out all the time. Let's start with what we know, at least as of this recording. We're going to go through the timeline and the now even more confusing timeline of the Celeste David saga. Because there's a piece now that is not necessarily adding up the way that I think makes a lot of sense. Or maybe it does if you're just not communicative and you're a household that is in utter chaos, which it sounds like Celeste may have come out of. So let's start with what we know. On April 5th of 2024, this is going to try and be our definitive timeline as of right now. Play along with me. If you're watching this later or a few hours, who knows? New stuff has come out. It always is going to be coming out in this case, so be aware. On April 5th of 2024, a missing person report was filed in Lake Elsinore, California. The name on the report, Celeste Rivas Hernandez, 13 years old at the time. That date became a baseline for this story. That's when the official paper trail started. The day law enforcement said, essentially, we're looking. From there, the story looked tragically familiar. Flyers, search parties, neighborhood concern, social media lighting up with photos, you know, of the bubbly, dark-haired girl, her age, her innocence, and the silence around her disappearance made it an emotional flashpoint for some folks, especially in the Riverside County community that she called home. Or as we're also now seeing from an interview of her boyfriend at the time saying, I don't think anybody really cared. That's another aspect of this story, but a whole other one and a rabbit hole I'm not going to go down at this moment in time. Something doesn't seem to add up here, because months after that report, Celeste was apparently not missing at all. She was seen. She was home. And she was on camera. A surveillance video reportedly captured on September 8th of 2024, nearly 6 months after her disappearance, shows a girl matching Celeste's description walking up to a neighbor's driveway, loud and upset, accusing the kids there of doorbell ditching her house. She's confrontational. She's vocal. She seems to know exactly where she is, and she's not hiding. She's also notably one day past her 14th birthday. Now keep that date in your mind, September 8th of 2024, because exactly 1 year later on September 8th, 2025, that same girl, Celeste, is found dead, decomposing. And David's Tesla, sealed inside, the front trunk parked, impounded, and abandoned in Los Angeles. The vehicle, as investigators confirmed, is registered to David Burke, known to fans around the world as David, or D4VD. And that's when the timelines crash into each other. On one track, you have an official record, April 2024, the report, the search, the story of the missing teenager. On the other track, you have hard video evidence that she was seen alive near her family's home months later, not just walking away, arguing, interacting, present. The disconnect between what was reported and what was real opens up a troubling space, not just for law enforcement, but for everyone following the case. And then the Tesla enters the story. According to parking enforcement logs obtained and reviewed by multiple media outlets, the Tesla in question, a 2023 Model 3, was first marked on August 27, 2025, parked on Bluebird Avenue in the Hollywood Hills. It was ticketed on September 3rd. Marked, what that means, you know, wondering? It's when they go by with the chalk and go, vehicle's still there, tires not moved. They know it has not change spaces. If you're unaware that this happens on the roads, this is what happens on the road. If you ever see chalk lines underneath your car and you're like, well, I've been parked there for a while. Yes, it's the authorities making sure it's not an abandoned vehicle. After so much time on a street alone, that chalk is still showing exactly at the tire spot where they marked it at whatever their cutoff is. Then they go, okay, time to impound this vehicle, which is eventually what happened. It was ticketed on September 3rd for exceeding the posted time limit. Then on September 5th, the vehicle was towed away to a nearby lot. Again, standard protocol in something like this. What's not standard is what happened next. 3 days after the tow on September 8th, an employee walking past the Tesla noted a smell. That prompted a call to police. LAPD's robbery homicide division responded. A search warrant was quickly issued, and they popped the trunk. That's where they're located on these Teslas. And there, inside a sealed black bag, were the remains of a young female, decomposed beyond visual recognition, allegedly, later identified as Celeste Rivas Hernandez. The forensic facts confirm this. Celeste was dead, likely for weeks. The death certificate lists her ages 14, not 15, as some earlier reports had suggested. She never made it to her next birthday, and as of this recording, the cause and manner of death remain deferred, which means investigators don't know yet or aren't ready to say how she died or whether anyone is criminally responsible beyond concealing her body. And I want to say this about the trunk, because one of our correspondents here on the program, Jennifer Coffendaffer, as you know, she has a Tesla. We were talking about this the other day. Apparently, she has the same model of Tesla as well. And she did a little experiment. She's the same size as the victim here, Celeste. She wanted to see, okay, could I fit in that trunk? Because it's not very big. And it's a front trunk. And again, fairly unscientific, but she's a former FBI agent. You can kind of get a guess on what was going on here by what she found. I'm saying, could you fit a body into that trunk undismembered in a hole? Doesn't look like it. Now, who's to say, you know, right angle, you shove a body, it's already dead and you contort it? I don't know. I think maybe, possibly, maybe that was tried. But that's not even the point here. The reason for dismembering is concealment. Not necessarily the modus operandi of the murder. And that's a key piece in this whole thing as it continues to develop. That's at least what it seems like. The reason for the dismembering seems to be convenience, seems to be so it could fit into this trunk, in this bag. Why anybody thought it's a good idea to hide a body in an abandoned Tesla, one of the most advanced vehicles on the planet, with more tracking than anyone possibly probably even knows exists on the vehicle is beyond me. But I tell you what, watch a few interviews with David, watch a few of those live streams of him and Celeste. I'm going to say the IQ level ain't super high. I'm going to say problem-solving skills ain't really up there. Certainly a talented musical artist. Not the brightest. If we're talking about, I don't know, day-to-day activities, interacting with your environment. But again, he's 20. I'm not surprised. We were all stupid at 20. This stupid? Well, you know, I think that, is up for debate. And again, that's questioning if he even had anything to do with this. He might have absolutely nothing to do with the body in his trunk. But if we're playing the game a little bit and going, well, if he did do this, like, what were you thinking? Like, whoever did it, pretty dumb move. Let's be clear. Deferred status in this on the cause of death as of right now, it's not unusual, okay? Deferred status is common when toxicology is pending or the decomposition is advanced. It doesn't mean there's no story to tell. It means the science isn't done talking. They need to do some more stuff. But here's where this becomes more than a timeline. It becomes a trapdoor, because when you lay those dates side by side, September 8th to 24th, she's alive on camera. September 8th, 25th, she's found dead. Something new emerges. It's not just a tragedy. It's a forensic puzzle. And every day that passes without an answer makes the public question whether there's a cover-up or something going on, a breakdown. And not saying cover-up from law enforcement, but who's covering up what and why? Or something even more insidious at play. Was she missing? Was she found and just not reported found? Are we missing that piece of the timeline? Which we may just be missing that piece of the timeline. That after she was reported missing, she came back. And nobody said anything. I don't know. There doesn't seem to be... it doesn't seem to be the most communicative bunch, the folks surrounding Celeste. So there's no question that the Tesla belonged to David Burke, and there's no question that it sat on the public street for over a week in one of LA's wealthiest enclaves before being towed. But what remains unknown is how Celeste got in the car when she was placed there. And by whom? The LAPD says the vehicle may have been parked for several weeks. If that's true and Celeste's remains were inside the entire time, then surveillance footage, sentry mode data, license plate readers, nearby cell tower pings could help pinpoint who had access. And you better be damn sure they're looking at all of that right now. We will get answers to these questions. We will find out who was driving that car. They probably already know. Who was near that vehicle? Was David near that vehicle? Does his digital footprint put him anywhere near this? This will all come out. And if David had anything to do with this, he will be charged. But we don't know what that data is. We don't know what that evidence is. It may show him nowhere near any of this. If, on the other hand, the body was placed after the car was already towed, that's a narrower window, which is even more strange. But hey, this is a case with a lot of questions in it. And how you get a body into the vehicle when it's on the tow lot, those are pretty secure. So the odds aren't great there, but you're going to have more cameras capturing that moment if it existed. More questions. Fewer people, more questions. That brings us back to the first timeline. If Celeste was missing on April 4th, but shown on camera in September 2024, alive, vocal, aware of her surroundings, then what does missing even mean in this case? Was she missing? Or was she just boyfriends with, was she the girlfriend of David? Was she a friend of David? Or what the hell was going on with David? That depends on the definitions. A child can be listed as missing if their whereabouts are unknown to their guardian, even if others know where they are. A child can be removed from a school enrollment without triggering an abduction alert. And in some communities, particularly where family dynamics are complex or strained or non-existent, a teenager gone for a while isn't always treated with the urgency that it truly deserves. Celeste's own family has not commented publicly as of right now. That silence has drawn criticism from some corners and empathy from others. People do grieve differently, but what can't be ignored is that someone filed a report. And as we're learning, new reporting from TMZ, actually as of right now, literally coming out between me getting this information ready to share with you and then this popping out. It's not even in front of me over here. It's over here. More evidence has surfaced on her troubled home. Riverside County Sheriff's deputies were called to her house 11 times in just 1 year. Deputies repeatedly responded to her house at Lake Elsinore, California, between February 24 and April 25, according to police reports obtained by TMZ. And get this, cops say deputies visited Celeste's home 3 times in a single day, March 19th of 2024. That's the same date on the surveillance video TMZ obtained from a liquor store on the same block as a family home. Celeste's sister went to the store after Celeste ran away and checked to see if she was on the video. There's the shot of Celeste running down the street, maybe you've seen this, and going out of frame. A car pulls out, and it's unclear if she got in that car. Two of the three visits on that day were at Celeste's home. The third was to the liquor store. So we have evidence of the police showing up when she was reported missing. The records state almost all the calls were listed as minor crime investigation, with the exception of one other call for suspicious circumstances. Police took reports for 4 of the incidents, and cops plan to do follow-ups on 3 of the calls. The depositions on the rest of the calls were not available, according to TMZ. And it's worth noting, police responded to Celeste's home at 9:29 p.m. on April 5th of 24, about a half hour after her family reported her missing to police at 9 p.m., according to her missing persons flyer. So there's that. So, can't be ignored is that someone filed the report and the police did follow up right away. And someone else knew she was still around. So how did these lines never cross where she's reported missing and then she's on camera later? I think the answer may actually be quite simple. No one let anybody know they found her. I'm going to guess that might be the answer to that question, or that she showed back up. But then when does she really truly go missing? Celeste's brother reportedly told media outlets that the family knew she had been seeing David. And while there's no confirmation of the nature of the extent of that relationship, no screenshots, no messages, no timeline yet offered by police, the fact that her remains were found in his vehicle raises some stark questions. What did David know and when did he know it? So far, he has not said a word. No press conference, no statement, no social media posts. His tour has been canceled. He's lawyered up. The release of his deluxe album, Wither, is on indefinite hold. Friends close to the artist told reporters they believe Celeste was 19, not 14. But even that claim hasn't been verified by anyone in law enforcement, at least not publicly. David's manager, Josh Marshall, did issue a brief public denial. He stated clearly, he said that he had zero knowledge of anything. He doesn't live in California. He works remotely. And he never received any emails, he claims, despite online claims that the family may have tried to alert him and his team about Celeste in 24. That email, if it exists, has not been released. No adult in David's circle has been charged, detained, or publicly named as a person of interest. And yet somehow a 14-year-old girl ended up dead in a car, registered to a pop star, sat decomposing for weeks, parked unnoticed in the middle of a major city. That line there about no adults in their lives have... And I think that might be the crux of this whole story. There were no adults in these people's lives, or at least not anybody that was being a loving critic. Nobody that was providing guidance and helping these kids navigate their way from childhood into their teen years, into adulthood in any sort of healthy way. And when that doesn't happen, when the parents, and I'm not speaking for David's parents, I'm not speaking for Celeste's parents, I'm just kind of speaking in general, and if the shoe fits, then the shoe fits. When you let the children run the show, do whatever they want, unchecked, crazy shit happens because they're kids. Because they're young, they're dumb. And when you get millions of dollars behind you at a very young age and have no clue how to handle anything like that, you make a lot of horrible choices. Not necessarily murder, but your judgment, well, you might feel a little unstoppable, because I'll tell you what, a lot of, you know, teenage boys, they already feel unstoppable without the fame and the money that David had flying at him. You make really dumb choices, and you may think you're unstoppable enough to have a relationship here with a 13, 14-year-old, and you're a freaking adult. Is anybody saying it's not good? This is not appropriate. This is not going to end well. This is not going to look good for you. Should someone say something, even if nothing is really going on here, in terms of inappropriate interaction, the optics are horrible. No one's stepping in saying, hey, dumbass, wake up. Oh, you're so profound, you 20-year-old, you. You know all about life. Your songs are so deep. You're 20. And you started writing your songs at what, 15? I'm sorry, there can only be so profound at 15. The final layer here is the digital firestorm. Online sleuths, Reddit threads, TikTok rumors, some helpful, many completely reckless. One Reddit user claimed to have found a Tesla key card near David's former residence weeks after the discovery. Again, could be absolutely nothing. They posted photos before handing it to the LAPD, according to them. While that may or may not have value in the investigation, the concern is chain of custody. If evidence was handled by civilians, the courtroom viability could be compromised, if it is even anything at all. And when a case is this emotionally loaded, that kind of noise can drown out the signal. Then there's the swatting. Just 10 days after Celeste's remains were found, a 911 call falsely reported gunshots and a dead body at David's family's home in Hampstead, Texas. Body cam footage showed police with weapons drawn, clearing the property while David's stunned parents insisted nothing had happened. It was a hoax and a dangerous one. No charges have been filed, but it's a stark reminder of how quickly grief can be weaponized into chaos. So now we wait. We wait for the toxicology results. We wait for forensic timelines. We wait to find out if David Burke will speak, or if authorities will speak for him, or if the evidence will speak for itself. And in the meantime, two timelines remain frozen in place. One says Celeste disappeared in April. The other shows her alive in September. At home, the place where she was said to have disappeared from and not returned. A third one now runs quietly alongside them both. The one we'll only know when science subpoenas and someone's conscience finally catches up. Celeste Rivas Hernandez was not a headline. She was not a hashtag. She was a child who, by all public evidence, slipped through cracks or was ignored by the people who should have cared. She was a child. When she ran from something, trusted the wrong person, or was failed by the very systems meant to protect her, what matters now is that we don't let her vanish twice, not from the record and not from memory. We'll be watching this case very closely. Your thoughts on that? Tell me in the comment section on YouTube. If you're not already there, be sure to press subscribe wherever you're getting podcasts so you don't miss any of our coverage of this and the many cases we're following for you right here at the Hidden Killers Podcast and True Crime Today. I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers Podcast.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done. If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.